dodges. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else. And this week
you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Venner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. Last week on the show, we covered the National Conference on Media Reform, a gathering of media activists determined to democratize the media in the public rather than the corporate interest. Even at such a large and diverse oppositional gathering, it seems that the media's treatment or lack of treatment of certain topics is off limits for discussion. By that, I mean the media's failure to challenge the obvious lies and impossibilities of the government version of events on and surrounding the events of September 11th, 2001. Kevin Barrett, the host of Truth Jihad Radio and an active member of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, filed this report from the media conference.
I'll tell you something. I'm getting a little curious about why it is that not one single panel here at this massive 3,000-plus person event was focused on the unanswered questions of 9/11. Peter Phillips of Project Censored proposed one, and they turned him down. So we did manage to organize an ad hoc 9/11 table today. Carol Brulé gets a lot of the credit for that. But, you know, my real question is, why is it that this conference is ignoring the 9/11 issue, just as it's ignoring the Israel-Palestine issue? And, well, you know, I asked the guy most responsible for this organization and the conference, the illustrious Bob McChesney, one of our great media studies people. And here's what he said.
Great deal. I'll be honest. You haven't looked at the leading videos presenting evidence.
No, I haven't. But no, I what I've seen hasn't really grabbed me. I guess I never thought it was a coherent. I mean, I guess I agreed with Chomsky, which is the idea that these guys could pull that off. Most incompetent people on earth could suddenly pull off something like this and then keep it quiet. The level of conspiracy to require to pull off something of that magnitude defies everything.
I find it hard to accept that a person as intelligent and thoughtful as Robert McChesney could really hold such a sloppy position if he'd really been willing to think about it. Many people have speculated as to why such leading lights of the left, so unafraid to challenge the establishment on many grounds, should also not take a critical position on the official story of 9/11. I find it hard to accept because, for me, the whole thing began to smell like a Reichstag fire when the FBI, a scant few hours after the towers blew up, released the names and pictures of the supposed 19 perpetrators, and even claimed to have found one of the hijackers' passports atop the pile of smoking rubble. You have got to be kidding. Among the various jobs I've held in life, I spent a few years as a private investigator. And thus I asked myself, if this was my case, how would I determine who the perpetrators were when both the perpetrators and the witnesses were all dead? This was supposed to be a surprise attack for which no group claimed responsibility. In itself unusual, as the whole point of such attacks is to get attention to a situation. So how did the FBI come up with a list of names in so short a time, even with its vast resources? It would take a process of elimination of the hundreds of passengers to come up with a set of suspect profiles. This all just happened too fast, and that was before we learned from a BBC report that some of the alleged hijackers pictured on American TV screens are alive and well in various foreign countries. Here was a scene of smoking carnage. Rescue workers and law enforcement people are combing the site, littered with debris of all kinds, as well as body parts. Things found in the street would be gathered and cataloged. Why focus in particular on a passport, if it even existed, which could have belonged to anyone, a tourist or business traveler, either in the buildings or on the street, who ran for his life when the towers came down? Every day, thousands of foreign nationals visit New York City. And contrary to the rhetoric about who died that day, many of the approximately 3,000 people who did not manage to escape the towers were foreign nationals. Put simply, the government pronouncements seemed canned, off the shelf, and ready to go. I don't know if there were 19 hijackers or not, but I do know this attack was no surprise to some highly placed people. We'll get into some new findings in that area on the program this week. Robert McChesney's comment to Barrett also strikes me as a non sequitur, given how covert operations work. You've seen it over and over, whether directed against activists in the 60s, foreign leaders, or people today. We know, and Bob must know, about the bombs detonated in Italian cities by right-wing government agents in order to blame the left and have an excuse to jail them. We know that government agents went among 60 student groups to try to talk them into escalating their activity into bombing or to foment dissension leading to murder. We know that this has been done currently against environmental activists. We know this is how covert operatives have paved the way for military coups, which, by the way, are conspiracies involving a few people in the know and a whole bunch of others just following orders. The reason that I think so many left leaders won't look at how well the events of 9/11 conform to the pattern of a false flag covert operation is because they are invested in another story about 9/11, that it was blowback, payback, chickens coming home to roost for the policies and actions of the U.S. in the Middle East over the years. They want to seriously engage the question, why do they hate us, with the vast public who mostly have no idea what has been done to others in their name over the years. These crimes are a matter of record, and there has been no justice. To contemplate 9/11 as an inside job, they seem to think, is to go down the road of a few bad apples, where a few culprits are trotted out, as in Watergate or Contagrate. But in the end, the brutal and oppressive system continues, vindicated, allegedly self-correcting, still brutal, with new faces at the helm. I sympathize with those concerns, but disagree that this is an either-or situation. As the late and beloved Utah Phillips once said, the earth is dying, and the people killing it have names and addresses. No system can function without individuals willing to operate it or cooperate with it. For those of us convinced that 9/11 was an inside job, the question is, what kind of a system puts power into the hands of such unscrupulous people repeatedly, people who conduct the state in a manner which would land people like us in jail if we tried it? What I mean is, for example, If you or I don't have any gas, we're not permitted to siphon someone else's car or kill them and take their car. We are supposed to suck it up and walk, hitchhike, take the bus. The defense, "I've got an AK-47 and I'm a superpower," would not fly. In spite of the refusal of corporate and much of independent media to look into 9/11 and the ostracism directed against those who do, Barrett reported a divergence between the leaders and the grassroots activists on the 9/11 question.
As I'm here in the middle of the left gatekeepers and the other 9/11 deniers among the so-called alternative media crowd, what I can tell you now, Barry, is that almost all of the on-the-ground grassroots participants here, that is the people who are not famous, agree with us on 9/11. The minute
sure.
I open my mouth about it, they say, "Oh yeah, you know, did you see, you know, this? Did you see 9/11 mysteries? Did you see loose change? It was an obvious controlled demolition. Everybody knows that it was a military attack on the Pentagon." This is what I haven't heard a single dissenting voice among the ordinary participants.
So, we must each have the courage of our own convictions. No matter what others tell us, we ought to think. Many people in the 9/11 movement have that in spades. People like Blair Gatsby, an Arizona man who went on a 17-day hunger strike to demand Arizona elected officials get hungry for the truth about 9/11. Arizona State Senator Karen Johnson got the message and delivered it to the floor of the Arizona Senate on June 10th.
Thank you, Mr. President Pro Tem. Point of personal privilege, guest in the gallery. And then I'd also like to request that my remarks of more than 200 words be entered into the journal.
Proceed.
Members, I would like to introduce a very special guest who has been joined today by several of his closest friends. Up in the gallery, we have many of the members of the 9/11 for Truth group, people who are asking for a new independent investigation of the attacks of 9/11-2001. In particular, I would like to introduce to you a very, very courageous man named Blair Gatsby. I'm going to ask the folks with Blair to help him stand as I tell you just a little bit about him. Blair is very weak because he has been fasting for more than 2 weeks to try to bring attention to the cause of 9/11 truth. This is the 16th day that Blair has gone without food and spent his day outside the office of U.S. Senator John McCain, pleading with the senator to take a look at new evidence of the 9/11 crimes. We have one man here who is sacrificing his own personal needs and desires to stand boldly, pleading for the world to take notice, to question, to research, and not place their lives in the hands of media soundbites, to think for themselves consciously and critically. Blair is an educator, and to me, this is what great educators do. Thousands of people all over the country, and actually around the world, have been watching on the internet as this hunger strike progresses here in Phoenix. I want Blair to know that I am one of his biggest fans, and that good people everywhere admire him for his courage and determination. Please give a warm welcome to Blair Gatsby and the 9/11 Truth Movement.
Welcome to the Senate.
Mr. President, if I might continue.
Proceed.
Last month, I started speaking publicly regarding my concerns about the attacks of September 11, 2001, which brought down the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, as well as Building 7. If you've watched the media coverage since I first began to speak out, you know how vicious and irrational it has been towards me. The media have worked hard to try to make it seem silly to even question the 9/11 Commission report, even though some of its own authors have done so, including both of the commission co-chairmen, Mr. Hamilton and Keene. Actually, the 9/11 Commission report represents just one theory, the theory that fire and the damage from the airplane impacts brought down the three buildings. This theory explains none of the features of the destruction that we all witnessed that day and which we can still observe on hundreds of videos. It explains nothing about how in 4 of 4 cases, no hijacking code was transmitted by the hijacked airliners. And in 4 of 4 cases, no fighter jets managed to get alongside any of the hijacked airliners. The military officers who lied to Congress about their failure to protect America would have been referred for prosecution by some of the 9/11 commissioners, but those commissioners were told that they did not have that authority. The events of that day were a heinous crime. They were against our nation and our citizens. And the sense of justice that exists in each of us demands to know what really happened and how all the perpetrators will be caught and punished. The speculation and theorizing won't end until a thorough, transparent investigation, free of conflicts of interest, takes place. Among the many theories that you can find on the internet is one that rises above all the rest. It is rock solid, confirmed by hard evidence, and supported by hundreds of scholars, architects, engineers, and other professionals who have the education, training, and expertise to know what they're talking about. This is the theory that explosive demolitions brought down the Twin Towers and Building 7. I've placed a handout on each of your desks inside of the Manila folder, and that has a photo of one of the towers as it begins to collapse. I'd like you to take a look at that photo, if you will. Notice in that picture that you see steel beams being flung outward from the building and great huge clouds of dust that is actually pulverized concrete. A building that falls down doesn't pulverize itself into dust as it drops. Imagine dropping a chunk of concrete 30 feet or more. Is it going to fall into dust? No. Yet the concrete in the towers was blasted into powder that covered all of Manhattan. Think about this now. You can see that powder already being formed long before that upper section has fallen more than a few floors. As you look at that photo, ask yourself, is this a picture of a building collapsing, or is this a picture of a building exploding? Does a building that collapses have the ability to fling its own steel beams sideways up to 600 feet? Does a building that is just starting to collapse blast its contents outwards in a massive cloud of dust? What do you see in the photo? I see an explosion, and so do millions of other people who are demanding a real investigation. More important than simply looking at a photo, engineers, architects, and scientists have evaluated the rubble at Ground Zero and other aspects of the buildings, and they have found evidence of at least 15 different characteristics of explosion. These 15 characteristics are listed on the handout as well. Despite the media's outrageous attacks on my sanity, intelligence, and patriotism, the emails and phone calls to my office have been 95% supportive of my request for a new investigation. I've been amazed, really, to see just how overwhelmingly the public rejects the official reports, not only of the 9/11 Commission, but also those of FEMA and NIST, which is your National Institute of Science and Technology. I assumed that expressing skepticism about the official story of 9/11 would be a punishing issue for an elected official, but I'm finding that it's quite the opposite. The public wants its leaders to stand up and be counted when it appears that something is wrong. The truth will set you free. Blair Gadsby and my guests today want the truth about 9/11. The American people want the truth about 9/11. They want an independent investigation, and so do I. I have provided each of you with a DVD entitled Improbable Collapse. I'm hopeful that you will watch it with an open mind and that you'll also study some of the wonderful, well-researched articles on the internet. I've included a list of the most credible websites with your handout. You don't have to embrace every theory about 9/11. Indeed, there are some that should be soundly rejected. But if you believe, as these scientists, architects, and engineers do, that the buildings were brought down by explosive demolition, then you must also agree that we need a new independent investigation. I have no preconceived notions about who did it, and I'm not pointing the finger of blame at anyone, but I do think that the worst attack on U.S. soil in American history deserves the best investigation possible. And that is not going to happen until people like us begin to speak out. The families of the nearly 3,000 people who died on September 11th, and the families of those who have been poisoned and died from the toxic residue that hung in the air for weeks afterward during the cleanup operation, they deserve to know what killed their loved ones. If anyone else was involved in the planning and implementation of these attacks, then they need to be brought to justice. I ask you to study the material I have given you and then join me in a call for a new independent investigation. Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. You know, we don't permit applause in the gallery. Thank you.
David Ray Griffin has been on an international speaking tour with his latest 9/11 book titled 9/11 Contradictions, An Open Letter to Congress and the Press. He'll be speaking in Montreal June 21st with Professor Michelle Chisadovsky, and I hope to be able to get a copy of that talk to play you on a future program. Griffin has specialized in compiling and reporting on the work of a host of independent researchers. Meanwhile, here are some excerpts from Griffin's June 4th talk in Los Angeles, including some incriminating new information about lies told by then New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani.
You know, these things really are all connected. There are so many reasons to get the truth about 9/11 revealed, and you know all these, I won't go through them, but one more is simply to keep it from happening again. Now, you know, after JFK, many people who were trying to get the truth out said, you know, if we don't get it exposed, they'll be emboldened, they'll do it again. And sure enough, Martin, Bobby, and then 9/11. And of course, before that, we had the original Pearl Harbor, and they got away with that too. Now, of course, that's the good terrorist event, because that was the good war. And we may not like to think about it, but that one also was an inside job. And so this is, you know, this is non-denominational. Republicans and Democrats have participated in these events. If we do get a real investigation or a trial, there is simply no doubt about what the verdict will be, because now, well, I began the book Debunking 9/11, debunking with the statement, the evidence that 9/11 is an inside job is now overwhelming, and the only task is to get people to look at the evidence. Well, in the meantime, the evidence has gotten stronger yet. And so in my new book, there is a lot more evidence. So let me give you a little example, a few examples of this. One is, we all know about Barbara Olson's famous phone call from Flight 77, in which she called Ted and the Solicitor General and said she had been hijacked, and the hijackers had put all the passengers and the pilots in the back of the plane. And of course, this was a pretty strange scenario. Here you had about 60 people, including the two pilots, one of whom was a champion boxer, being held off by three small guys with knives and box cutters. So it was an implausible story anyway. But to give you some idea how important this story was for getting the public myth, We all know that the hijackers had box cutters, right? It was only Barbara Olson's alleged call in which box cutters were mentioned. This was the one that, one of the ones that really got the so-called war on terror started. People just ready to go kill Muslims because sweet Barbara Olson had been murdered by these Muslims. 2006, the trial of Zacharias Moussaoui, the FBI turned in a report on phone calls from all the flights. When they got to Flight 77, they did mention Barbara Olson. They said, now Ted had said there were two calls, about a minute each. The FBI said one call attempted, unconnected, it lasted 0 seconds. So this is pretty astounding. The FBI is part of the Department of Justice, and yet it has said that the story told by the former Solicitor General of the Department of Justice is false. Didn't happen. And of course we got screaming headlines in the New York Times and the Washington Post revealing this story. What about the other stories about people making phone calls saying there are hijackers on the plane? Flight 93 was the big one for cell phone flight calls. More cell phone calls from Flight 93 than from all the other planes put together. About 13 calls were clearly indicated as being cell phone calls. Now, of course, we had debates, can you make cell phone calls from high-altitude airliners? The most of the evidence suggests about 1,000 feet is the maximum for this, and the flight was up to 30 to 40, over 40,000 feet. Popular Mechanics debated the, disputed this and said, 30, 40,000 feet, no problem. At about the same time, the FBI was turning in this report to the Moussaoui trial. And what did it say? Flight 93, 37 calls, 35 from seatback phones, 2 from cell phones, both at 9:58 when the plane was down to 5,000 feet. Now, that's still a little high, but at least it's arguable they'd be possible. So the FBI allowed these all these hundreds of, literally thousands of stories around the world about these cell phone calls and let the public believe this, and then very silently says, didn't happen. Now, what does this mean? Well, you could just say, well, all these people were mistaken. They just thought their relatives said, I'm calling you on a cell phone. Or they misremembered. Except Dina Burnett. She said, I knew it was Tom calling me because I looked on my caller ID and I saw his cell phone number on all 3 or 4 calls. So here again, very strong evidence that these calls are fabricated, and there is a technology to voice morph and also to fake the number. My favorite story: Muhammad Atta gets to Portland, gets to Boston on September 10th. I mean, he's already there. He rents a car, and he and a buddy go up to Portland, Maine, stay overnight, have to get up very early the next morning, catch a commuter flight back to Boston in time to catch Flight 11. Of course, Otto was going to be the hijacking pilot. And also, he was the ringleader of the whole operation. So it was very important that he got there. Why would have he done such a thing? We all know commuter flights are quite often late. If that flight had been 45 minutes late, they would have had to call off this whole operation they had allegedly been planning for 2 years. So it was a big mystery. The 9/11 Commission and the FBI says, we have no idea why Atta would have done this, but he did. You know, we've got photographs and so on that show that Atta was there in Portland and so on. If you go back to the stories, well, there was another mystery. Why didn't his luggage make the flight? Now, it was a good thing it didn't, because after the planes hit the tower, somebody looks in the airport there, and there's Muhammad Atta's luggage. So they look in and they find all this incriminating evidence, directions how to fly, you know, Boeing airplanes, and a Quran and a will saying he's looking forward to being a martyr and going to heaven and all that. So, but it was still a mystery. Why didn't the luggage make the flight? They had a full hour. Everybody else's luggage made the flight. Why not Otis? Well, if you go back to September 12th and see what all the newspapers and TV channels were telling you, a very different story. See, according to the story we've been told, Otta and Al Omari rented a blue Nissan, drove up to Portland, left it in the airport there the next morning, flew back. But on September 12th, if you read the newspapers, you'll see Otta had left this treasure trove of information in a white Mitsubishi in the Boston Logan Airport.
He packed twice.
Defense attorney, eh? And a couple other guys named Bukhari had taken the blue Nissan up to Portland, stayed overnight, and then took the commuter flight back. But then by Wednesday, they found a problem. The Bukharis hadn't died on 9/11. One was still alive, and the other one had died a year before. So they just changed the story, because everybody knew about this story about the guys taking the Nissan up to Portland. They just changed it and said Otta did it, and the story about the white Mitsubishi just disappears. So here you see, they're just making it up. Another new thing that came out this last year, Pentagon. The official story is, it was a big surprise. They had no idea a plane was coming at them. And that's why they didn't evacuate the Pentagon. I mean, that was a big question. 125 people in the Pentagon were killed. They do exercises, evacuation exercises. They have these very loud buzzers that go off. See? And yet nothing went off that day. Why not? Well, Rumsfeld says, we had no idea anything was in the coming this way. Now, it's very implausible in itself, because, I mean, the military have the best radar in the world. And the idea that that morning, after two planes had already hit the World Trade Center, a plane could have turned around the Midwest, come back to the Pentagon and hit it. So many reasons that story is false, but now we've got one more. This was revealed on CNN this year. There was a state-of-the-art military plane called an E-4B flying over the White House at that time. It was caught on tape. And this is the most sophisticated command communications and control plane in the world. And there they are, a couple miles from the Pentagon. They would have seen everything, and yet the official story is that the plane comes in and Hani Hanjour does this amazing 333-degree downward spiral, takes over 3 minutes, and that would have been a time for planes to go up from Andrews and shoot it down. So, more and more. A new thing came out about bombs in Building 7. We all know there were dozens of reports of bombs going off in the towers. But Building 7, these stories emerged more slowly. But now we've got a really good one. This is the Michael Hess, Barry Jennings story. How many of you know this already? Not very many. This is amazing. Michael Hess was one of Rudy's really good friends. In his book, Rudy calls him Mike. And that morning, Mike wanted to go up and see Rudy as soon as the first plane had hit the World Trade Center. So he gets Barry Jennings from the Housing Authority to take him up to 423 of Building 7, World Trade Center 7. They get up there. So we're talking about 9 o'clock that morning. They get up there, and the place is already empty. They see steaming coffee and half-eaten sandwiches on the desks. They had skedaddled out of that building. And So then Barry gets on his phone and says, what should we do? And they're told, you should get out of there as quickly as possible. So they get on the elevator. It won't work. So they start going down the stairs. So they're still on the 23rd floor. By the time they get down to the 6th floor, huge explosion knocks the landing out from under them. Barry says, I just barely held on, crawled back up, and then we went back up to the 8th floor and looked out the window, and I could see the one tower there and the other tower there, both still standing. And then we were able to, after a while, signal some people, and firemen came up and rescued them. But Michael Hess says, well, we were there about an hour and a half, trapped. At 11:34, then, after they're rescued, Michael is half a mile away being interviewed on UPN 9 News, New York. So we know that he's rescued by at least 11:15, probably earlier than that, to get a half mile away and all that. And yet, NIST, in its report, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, mentions these two city officials who were found in Building 7 and then rescued. And they were rescued between 12:10 and 12:15. Mm-hmm. Now, why so late? Well, because they had to cover up the idea that this was an explosion. So they said the reason the elevator wouldn't work was that was when the South Tower came down, 9:59. And then when they thought there was an explosion down on the 6th floor, that was just the North Tower coming down, 10:28. You add an hour and a half to that, you're up to noon. So that's why they had to say they're rescued, not till afternoon. And yet we've got objective proof that Michael Hess had been rescued about an hour before. So we've caught NIST in an outright lie there, covering up the evidence, the fact that these city officials experienced a massive explosion in Building 7 quite early that morning. There's a theory, by the way, that it was a dud, you know, that the explosion that's probably supposed to go down pretty early that morning, maybe under the cover of the one of the towers going down. So we wouldn't have had these beautiful pictures of Building 7 coming down. This is a theory that it makes sense to me that has been developed by a fellow named Jeremy Baker. Let me stop there on that and just, well, let me add one more. This was going to be a lot more important if Rudy had become the Republican nominee, but it's still pretty important. He was on Peter Jennings that morning on ABC News and said, you know, we were over there in World Trade Center 7. And, of course, this fits with what Barry and Michael said. You know, they'd already left Building 7, which was supposed to be absolutely the safest place in town if there was any terrorist attack, and yet they left. Anyway, he says, we were in there, and we were told the World Trade Center was going to collapse. And sure enough, it did collapse before we could get out of there. Now, how put yourself back before, you know, buildings have never collapsed in the history of our universe. Steel-framed, high-rise buildings. No matter how long the fire had lasted, we've had fires lasting 18 hours and no collapse. I mean, it's physically impossible to get a collapse of that nature from a fire anyway. So there was no objective reason for anybody to have told Giuliani that the buildings were going to come down. The new development here is a We Are Change group confronted Rudy about this and said, how did you know the buildings were going to come down? And he tried to deny it and said, oh, I didn't know they were going to come down. The other fellow in the group repeats word for word what Giuliani had told Peter Jennings. So then he says, well, what I meant was, we figured it was going to come down after 7, 8, 10 hours, you know, like other buildings have. But, of course, no other buildings have. So Rudy's caught, and then the other question was, well, who were these people who told him the building was going to come down? If you look at the oral histories given by the firefighters, we've got 503 of them. Trace it back, you find out it was the Office of Emergency Management, which is Rudy's own office. So it was Rudy's own people who were telling him that the buildings were going to come down. So how did Rudy Giuliani's people know this unless they were the ones who knew that explosives had been planted in the towers? And it turns out they're also the ones who start the rumor around noon that Building 7 is going to come down. So this would have really been potentially explosive if he had become the Republican nominee. But, you know, John McCain has written the foreword to the Popular Mechanics book, so that can be the source of some excitement, too. Let me end with one more point about why we are now in better position than ever to have a trial or investigation, and that it's really absolutely foolproof if we have an honest judge and or jury. Well, Bill's going to get an honest judge. It's that when we were in, some of us arguing this stuff a few years ago, they could say, you know, who are you people? You're just a bunch of conspiracy nuts on the internet. And then, you know, I joined the movement, and so they said, well, a bunch of conspiracy nuts and an aging theologian. And, you know, then we got physicists. We got Stephen Jones. We said, well, we got physicists saying this now. And then they'd say, like Noam Chomsky said, oh, this isn't physicist purview. You know, you need engineers. And when I was on Democracy Now!, that was the big challenge near the end of the show. What engineer can you name who supports your view? I'd been trying. There was a guy in Mexico, but he wouldn't give his name. And so I didn't have a name. Now we've got, if you go on the website, some 400 architects and engineers. And that's in 1 year that Richard Gage has collected that many signatures. And we have people all over the world, guys from the most prestigious university in Switzerland, saying no question about Building 7, controlled demolition. We also have veterans for 9/11 Truth, many former military officers, also many intelligence officers, and then pilots for 9/11 Truth saying, you know, the stories about the planes going in the buildings and particularly about the Pentagon, no way that can be possible. So we've got experts in all the relevant fields who are now part of the 9/11 movement, have been able to, willing to put their names on this, even though it might cost them jobs. I'm hoping still for some more groups.
There's firefighters.
We need. Is there now a firefighters for 9/11 Truth? Oh, it has started, or
yeah, there's a group up in Washington.
Okay, but it hasn't become a national group yet.
And they're going to be linked up with a group in LA here.
Well, that's great, because really all you need to do is get that website there, and then a place for everybody to sign up. It'd be helpful if we had political leaders for 9/11 Truth, and actually the Japanese parliamentarian Yuki is working on this now, and he's talked to Michael Meacher, and now he's going back. He's going to go back to Europe and try to get more support for this. We could use actors and entertainers for 9/11 Truth. Now, just who might start that organization? And we're also working on religious leaders for 9/11 Truth.
That's an impossible task.
And I was hoping somebody would start intelligence officers for 9/11 Truth. But and so these may be on board pretty soon, but already we've got we've got more than enough professional expertise on this. So this is not a time to give up on 9/11 and say, oh, we worked this hard and nothing has come of it, so let's move on. Who knows what will happen with the changing of the guard, assuming it gets changed. I'm fearful that many people will say, okay, the criminals are out of office now, and so let's not work on it. But the more hopeful possibility is people will say, now there may be a real chance for an investigation. Kucinich might have his investigation, and so on. So I would say this is a time to work harder than we ever have before, because we've got a much stronger story than we ever had before, both in terms of evidence and in terms of people who belong to the movement with high credibility. And now with what Bill Pepper has said, as I say, this is the most hopeful, these things that he's suggested, the most hopeful suggestions I've heard thus far.
That was David Ray Griffin. He spoke on June 4th in Los Angeles.
This is from the old school, new school.
Ah, 9/11's a lie.
And that was from the video 9/11's a Lie by the Free Bees. Worth seeing if you can watch video online. Just Google Free Bees, bees with two E's like the insect. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. Coverage of the 9/11 truth issue has been gradually breaking into commercial radio thanks to hosts like Mike Malloy of Nova M Network. He does a great show that's well worth hearing if you can put up with the commercial interruptions. You can hear it online. Just Google Nova M Radio. He does the late night shift on weekdays. Malloy recently read a letter from a listener that will set up our final presentation of the program from Professor Graham McQueen.
All right. Most of us have had epiphanous moments or an epiphany. Apparently the other night, Bob had an epiphanet. Bob writes, an epiphanet. Every single person I know who doubts the official version of what happened on 9/11 started with how the World Trade Center buildings fell and went from there. Things didn't look right. It looked like a controlled demolition. The government's account of how those buildings fell did not seem to explain what we all saw. And then the artificial mystery of what happened at the Pentagon. It is an artificial mystery because the FBI is withholding at least 84 surveillance tapes that were seized in the immediate aftermath of the attack on the Pentagon. There would be no dispute about what hit the Pentagon if we could see the tapes. What has been released does not show anything that looks like a 757 hitting the building. And so the conjecture began. And the government can bring all speculation to an end by simply showing us a tape of what occurred. 3 months after 9/11, the National Geographic and others reported on this, published short interviews with the gas station owner Jose Velasquez. Quote, his gas station, open only to Department of Defense personnel, is the last structure between the Pentagon and the hillside that hours later would become a wailing knoll. By the time I got outside, all I could see was a giant cloud of smoke, first white, then black, coming from the Pentagon, he said. It was just terrible, terrible thing to be so close to. Velasquez says the gas station's security cameras are close enough to the Pentagon to have recorded the moment of impact. I've never seen what the pictures look like, he said. The FBI was here within minutes and took the film. The timeline, Bob writes, of the FBI's arrival is curious. Back to the Geographic special. The second business was initially believed to be the Sheraton National Hotel, which overlooks I-395 and the Pentagon. Initial reports pointed out that hotel staff had sat watching the video surveillance in horror before the FBI arrived and shut down the scene. The timeliness of the FBI's arrival is, again, curious. However, according to FBI statements in response to the Freedom of Information request, the hotel in question was not the Sheraton, but was in fact the DoubleTree in Arlington, Virginia, and this video did not capture the impact of the flight. So the FBI confused the Sheraton National Hotel that did have videotape of the attack with the DoubleTree in Arlington that did not. Curiouser and curiouser. So the mystery about the attack on the Pentagon is needlessly drawn out, Bob writes. Conjecture runs rampant. And what the hell happened in that field in Pennsylvania? The government story does not seem to add up. And not only are they not forthcoming with anything to help clear the air, and they easily could, they did everything they could to stonewall an investigation in the first place, on the face of it. these actions look like a cover-up by guilty parties. So how could a 9/11 truth movement not spring up? Some researchers began delving into the mechanics of how three steel skyscrapers structurally failed and collapsed. But what is most annoying to me, Bob writes, is the attitude of the 9/11 conspiracy debunkers. And there's a website, debunking911.com. In a real dialogue, the participants begin with a kind of peer-to-peer relationship. Not so at this website. The 9/11 conspiracy debunkers immediately start off establishing an uneven playing field. Since you question the official story, you are a bastard idiot. They are from the same rational zone. The relationship turns from peer-to-peer straight away into parent-to-idiot-child from outer space. They ridicule what we think we've seen. They talk to us as though we are so gullible. We really believe that David Copperfield ate an elephant, or saw the Statue of Liberty in half, or whatever lame-ass stuff he does during his show. They treat us like we are so stupid to fall for what we think we saw. We're all Zippy the Pinheads, and it's almost too much for them to even endure our presence. Once again, every single person I know that doubts the official version of what happened on 9/11 started with how the World Trade Center buildings fell and went from there. Some researchers began investigating how the three buildings collapsed. Others started working backwards from that point and looked into the actions or the policies of the government and key government officials. But it started with things didn't look right. Something smelled. The 9/11 conspiracy debunkers have placed all their chips on the mechanics of 9/11. They put all their 9/11 eggs in one basket. That's why they get so upset when we question the official story. Their denial is entirely buttressed by the technicalities of 9/11. If you assault those, then that's all they've got. If you somehow breach that bulwark, then they've got to reconsider everything. They might have to consider the possibility of their government's involvement. Oops, can't go there. Stop, stop. You're making their brains hurt. If you don't talk about the technicalities of three buildings falling down, what did they have to counter with? Did or did not George W. Bush tell the CIA briefer after the Bin Laden determined to strike in the USA presentation, "All right, you've covered your ass now," and then go fishing? Thermite? Who cares about thermite? We've got Bush administration hampered FBI investigation into Bin Laden family before 9/11. They, the debunkers, unequivocally state that appearances be damned. Regardless of what it looked like that day, there's a reasonable scientific explanation for three buildings falling down. All the anomalies surrounding the Pentagon attack and the crash in Pennsylvania, so don't even start looking for a conspiracy regarding the government's complicity in the attacks of 9/11. Is that what they're really saying? We're to ignore the preponderance of evidence demonstrating advanced knowledge of the attacks and the government's dismissal of the numerous warnings about impending attacks? A great deal of this information was brought to light because of the researchers who were motivated to look into the totality of 9/11. We can't disregard evidence just because some people quibble about why the research was begun. But even the authors at debunking911.com write, "Real conspiracy theory. The evidence for a conspiracy to use 9/11 to invade Iraq is significant. While there is not one shred of evidence the government blew up the World Trade Center, there is evidence that they used the tragedy to remove Saddam Hussein using poor weapons of mass destruction evidence." So whoever wrote this will not admit that the government committed the monstrous act of using 9/11 to lie to it. Will admit that the government committed the monstrous act of using 9/11 to lie us into a preemptive war. Somehow, the hundreds of thousands of deaths, the displaced millions, and the looting of hundreds of billions of dollars, the results of that conspiracy, is in some way more acceptable? If the government's conspiracy to lie us into a war is credible, why isn't the government orchestrating the trigger event even more remotely plausible? The Debunking 9/11 Commission position is that the government took advantage of 9/11 to start the Iraq War. I can almost, but not quite, buy into that argument. I can't accept it because the Bush-Cheney regime had too many things ready to go, off-the-shelf items like the Patriot Act and the Department of Homeland Security. They were too ready to take advantage of the 9/11 attacks. That smacks of advanced knowledge, let it happen, made it happen scenarios.